Welcome everybody back to Veil of Sound. Somewhere between Christmas and New Year, we hope that you had enough time to digest all the lovely food that you had. And we're back with another one of our daily interviews at the moment. No other content on the Veil of Sound right now than interview. You have already seen some pretty cool interviews, some really great people. And you also have seen the label boss of this little nice gentleman over here. Because the first interview we did, or that the first one that we released, was the one with Robin from Pelagic Records. It's funny, Matt, you cough at exactly that moment.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Hi,
good,
Robin.
All good. We're very happy to have Gustav from Spurf here on the show. So, Gustav, thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
And I might have to say, thanks for being on the show again. Gustav and I tried to do this interview, 2.5 months ago?
Something
when you were
lines.
Still on tour. Do you want to explain why we are now sitting here at the end of November and doing it again?
Yeah, basically, I mean, I didn't know the format. I know it was an interview, and we have done some interviews, and we scheduled a meeting, and I thought, well, no problem, I can do that from the car. So when it turned out that it was a video interview, it would turn out to be a little bit more difficult since the 5G connections started to drop out sometime in northern Italy. And yeah, we tried our best. You should try to put some clip of it.
I can still do that.
Yeah, you could do that just to show how it looks like in the car driving. So I was sitting in the front seat and the other guys, you know, sitting around me. But I think this is a better format for the interview. Hopefully the connection will be better.
Maybe this is our first video interview with outtakes at the end.
Sorry for destroying this interview with my coughing.
No problem.
I'll do my best.
Yes, me too. So the other question, but I have to ask, after today here in northern Bavaria, what is the weather like over there in Norway, right? Yeah, Norway.
Yeah. I live in Tromsø, which is kind of pretty far north. So right now it's dark, it's snowy, but quiet, no wind. And I think -8 degrees Celsius, which is typical winter weather, I guess. So that's what we're, you know, expecting for the next few days, at least.
How much snow do you have?
I mean, on my porch, 40 centimeters, maybe.
Did you just say 40? Wow, crazy.
I'm
asking because I just drove home from school, and I really had to drive very, very slowly because the roads have not been prepared at all, and it's just started to snow this afternoon. If you ask me.
And you don't have summer tires, I guess. You just have summer
tires. No, I don't have summer tires. I got winter tires. Okay. And however, the streets haven't been prepared. I think we don't even have a centimeter, but already people are like,
yeah.
Come on.
Do you usually get much snow in the winter?
Not anymore. Okay. It's global warming or global climate change has definitely had its effect on the winter over here. And it's interesting, like 10 kilometers north, they have some pretty safe snow parts and periods, but those periods 15 years ago, those periods lasted 2 weeks. Now they're happy if it's 2 days, but at least they get snow regularly. And also enough to go skiing or sliding downhill. We're not here to talk about the weather. We're here to talk about an album that you released at the end of September. And I know I'm going to mess up a lot of pronunciation today. So for all the Norwegian people out there, I'm sorry. The record that you put out is called Brefjere. I hope I pronounced it at least a little bit correctly.
Good enough.
Thank you. what struck me is, I mean, like, this is not the first piece of music that you have put out as a band, but it seems as if this in some way by now is your biggest achievement. I think the jump from the last release to this one is a big jump. So can you explain the difference, or maybe the difference in the way that you wrote this one compared to the other records, which are not bad, they're really, really good records. But this one, from a lot of friends of mine in the post-rock scene, I know that this one is going to pop up in a lot of album of the year lists.
Well, thanks. So yeah, difference between the previous record. I mean, first of all, actually, a lot of the material of this record was written, some of the material was written a long time ago. And parts of it was written before the previous record, and a lot of it, of course, after. But what I like to do when I make music, I mean, the way we approach music is that I do the main bulk, the main compositions in my, you know, desktop studio here in the living room or somewhere, and kind of compose like 90% of it. And then we rework it together and invite a lot of guests to improvise and respond to the music. And that's basically the same procedure as we have always done. But while I'm doing that, I usually have some ideas that continue to develop, or just have sketches laying around. And I have a lot of sketches from many years back. And sometimes it's nice to listen to them again and take them up and find out, well, now I'm ready to continue writing this song. And so it's kind of interesting because it's not like I don't view the albums like chronologically totally independent of each other, because some parts actually, you know, some parts of the second album was written before the first songs of the EP, and, you know, everything is like blurred over the years, which I think is nice, because I really would like to have stuff. I mean, some people are very into getting the immediate expression of where I am right now and everything. That's not what we're aiming for. It's kind of something that can last for a longer time. And if I can still remain interested in this theme or that riff or that idea of like 5, 6, 7 years after it was first thought out, I think that's a very good, you know, idea. Like, it's a good quality sign for the idea. So anyways, so the way that the albums were approached was quite similar, like in terms of the process. But I guess that actually this album was like the process where I actually sat down and worked, concentrated on it, was a much more concentrated period than the previous record. And maybe that's something that shows also, because I learned or relearned so much from the previous record, making the previous record and having a lot of the same ideas actually transformed into the new album. It's not like we're trying to do something completely new every time. It's kind of doing the same thing, just better. Mm-hmm. And what we're aiming for is making complete albums that are, you know, thought out from the beginning to the end. I think on this record, on Brefjärde, we kind of took that a step further in on many different parameters. So it's just, I think just like, it's maybe pretentious to say that about this about your own music, but I think just the objective qualities of the album is better. Like the a lot of the kind of handicraft things about arrangements and about composition that just, we learned so much from the previous records that we're moving into the next album. This album, and then, I mean, maybe just, I think that shines through also in the final result. So yeah, something along those lines, maybe.
You've said that some of those songs are pretty old, and I can totally agree. If you, after a few years, come back to an idea and it's still appealing, that is a sign of a good initial idea. However, I guess that you also, as you've mentioned, you've put a lot of thought into the finishing touches of several of the tracks. You know, some of the tracks are so nearly overpoweringly beautiful and yet never overpoweringly strong. It's just really beautiful arrangements, beautiful songs. So how much of the initial idea is still in songs like Somskier? And how much is new arrangement, new adornments, new details?
I mean, 95% is new. I mean, it's just maybe a part of a melody or a few chords or maybe a combination of rhythms. And it's, I mean, you could recognize those parts, I guess, in the like the initial idea sketches laying around. But obviously it's hugely different. So Somskier is actually one of those songs that maybe the most of the old sketch was transposed into the new song, and it's kind of the opening melody theme where it starts and which is returns in the song several times, which is kind of a very basic but I think nice melody, but trying to elevate that from just being a melody into a track, like a full song, and then also making that song work within the complete album setting, finding its right spot between other songs, and you know, all that is obviously different. And I mean, I never thought we'd ever record something with a choir, and obviously that wasn't thought out in advance before the final stages of the composition. So yeah, thanks for the comments.
That you never mentioned or never thought about using a choir, and now you have a 14 voice choir on that track, which is interesting. What is also striking about the record, for all those who have not yet, and if you haven't, you should listen to it. If you haven't listened, do it. What is striking about Breviere is also the cover, because the cover basically tells us a little bit about the content of a record. It is not an abstract one, on one hand. On the other, it might be. But I find things that I sometimes also think I'm hearing, you know, mountains, okay, probably not audible. Birch tree in the wind, maybe audible. Butterfly, no audible. But the last one is, what is the last motif on the cover for?
The wind. It's the wind.
Yeah.
The wind. Like leaves falling.
Yes, or exactly.
Now that's the tree.
Yeah, which is still, of course, audible. Did you also go about the record and try to find sounds that you included? Because as I said, sometimes I have a feeling as if I'm hearing field recordings.
No, there are no field recordings on this album, just on the previous one. All the three previous ones, actually, we had field recordings, but not on this one. I don't know exactly why. It just didn't end up doing that. I like, personally, adding those touches and when used correctly. So, yeah, I don't know.
Is there something in those four motifs that you try to transfer for the music as well?
Yes, definitely. I mean, the whole concept of the album is oriented around those four kind of characters. So it was kind of this, you know, maybe a revelation of sorts. And I got the idea that, you know, when trying to make the whole thing fit together, make it into a one compositionally whole, you need to have some idea of what ties it together. And what was really nice was when I got the idea that we could actually, first of all, include some vocals and make a narrative out of it. Not only individual songs, but actually putting in a kind of a conversation between different characters. So the whole album is structured around four, I mean, it's four times two songs. So four mainly instrumental songs and four vocal-based songs, two with choirs and two with soloists. And each of those four represents those four characters or those four, you know, themes. And kind of here where I live, I mean, I wish I could show you, but everywhere I look outside my window, I can see huge mountains and I can see trees. So the basic idea was just to see what would the birch tree and the mountain say to each other if they could talk. I mean, they're inhabiting the same landscape, sort of, but obviously in very, very different ways. And from there, this tried to, together with Eirik, who's also writing, you know, doing the guitars in Spud, but also contributing a lot on the lyrical parts. Mm-hmm. We tried to work out how we saw this kind of a conversation between these two develop and who else might be there. So we wanted to add something from the animal kingdom, and we got this idea of adding this very particular butterfly. Actually, it's a moth. So it's a pepper moth, who is responding to the conversation of between the birch tree and the mountain, and adding its layers in between how it experiences change and time. And then the wind comes in as the final narrator or final respondent in the end, and kind of trying to solve the knot that the other three characters have tied for themselves in their conversation, because they are struggling to understand each other because they are situated in the same place, but they see the world so differently because they, you know, obviously inhabit different time spans. And together the wind says that together you symbolize the nature of the human being and how we both carry on this like immense depth of biological and cultural history in our backpacks. At the same time, we're living short lives and just see this kind of brief time span. So you have the contrast between this huge, slowly moving time span and the brief lives of the humans or the butterflies or the bird trees, and how this is intermingled in a very strange way. So it's kind of an existential philosophical approach to understanding human nature through a nature myth with things from the mineral kingdom and the animal kingdom and everything going together. So yeah, basically it's something along those lines.
don't undersell it. I like the parallels that you draw, because I think, I mean, like, we all know of probably hundreds of versions of this story with other characters, with other motifs, but the basic story is the same. What I like about yours is the twist you give it. You don't incorporate a human person, you don't incorporate an animal which in reality could speak. So you basically, in a way, give a voice to the voiceless. Is it also for you, how should I say, is it also for you important to give voice to the voiceless nature, something that we cannot understand?
Yes. I mean, I would say that it's kind of, I mean, in my daytime job, I'm working with art history and philosophy, kind of what I'm doing. And what's great about making art is that you don't have to be as clear and precise as you have to do when you're doing, you know, real research. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea about, or like the concept, if you will, about Spur is kind of diving into those difficult and incomprehensible sides of our nature and our parts of our existence. And when I'm saying ours, I don't mean only the human. It's also the more than human and the part, like the connection between humans and nature and vice versa. And what I found really inspiring or nice to think about with this project was kind of inverting the perspective and kind of using or seeing or delving into the kind of the fictional world of that which is beyond our capacity to comprehend. And I don't know, it's not an ethical project in trying to give a voice to the voiceless in the sense of giving them a space or place or anything like that, but it's kind of responding to what I see and just acknowledging that also nature is inhabiting the same world as we are and just in a very different way.
Mm-hmm. Something that struck me also is that when looking at a record and looking at the different motifs that you incorporated, at first I thought it was closer to the idea and notion of the four elements. But it's not, because you basically don't have fire, right? Have everything else, but not fire. Was that something that you wanted, or is that something that you consciously left out? And if so, for which reason?
No. And basically, it's just because that was not our intent to go into the elements. Mm-hmm. It was more like finding a proper narrative from what is basically here and around us, and trying to not go too deeply into other sources of inspiration on that concrete level. So no.
I know that you recently moved to Tromsø. Did the inspiration come after your move, or is the inspiration also a reason for your move?
No, we just moved here for a lot of practical reasons, actually. So, and the great thing about living in Norway is that you have nature close by anywhere. Basically, so even in a big city or a big for Norwegian standard city like Oslo, you are surrounded by forests and you have the Oslo Fjord very close. So I mean, most Norwegians enjoy nature or go, you know, hiking, skiing, whatever, that's a very common thing. But what's different about Tromsø is also that I'm just closer to this kind of natural pressure or whatever. It's a harsher nature here than down south. I mean, for those of you who don't know, it's about 2 hours flight from Oslo to Tromsø, far north. So, or 24 hours drive.
Did you just say 24 hours drive?
Yeah, 24 hours.
Okay,
so it's pretty far. So the roads aren't that good. So what's nice about this place is, you know, you have higher contrasts when it comes to nature. You know, the wind is stronger, the everything is colder. You know, you have the midnight sun in summer, aurora a lot of the time. Now, you know, it's polar darkness, polar night. So we don't have sun for another 2 months. It's just dark. Which is, of course, very different, but you get used to it and you know, learn to live with nature, not against it. Mm-hmm. Even though it sounds a bit romantic, it's kind of true. And we try to be a lot of outdoors here as well, even though it's winter and cold and everything. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really nice. And it's difficult if you're just a little bit open towards nature. It's difficult not to get inspired in these conditions. So, I mean, that felt very natural to me.
So then the record is very close to, how should I say, to an admiration poem without words, sometimes with words?
Like, yeah,
it's your pure admiration for it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good way to put it. I mean, it's I really feel that this is a Tromsø album in a way. It feels very linked to this particular place. Even though we don't have any pepper moths around here. So.
Okay. Well, something's got to give. Is it just my imagination, or is this kind of description of beauty, this love for nature? That is something that you set out to incorporate in the sound, right? Because, as I said, there are some really beautiful moments on this record, and there is no way to use any other adjective.
Thank you. I mean, it's nice to hear that. I mean, the music we make is dramatic. I mean, it is about telling.
I mean, you're surrounded by mountains. Why shouldn't it be dramatic?
Yeah, but I mean, dramatic in both sense of the words is something like a play. It's telling a story. Also, the music is telling a story, even though it's not necessarily a concrete one. Mm-hmm. Using music as it's not concrete. It's not pure music. It's always narrative, even though even if we don't have a narrative to go along with it in terms of lyrics, you can feel. And you're setting the stage literally in music, and you bring in some theme and you develop it, and it's about building tension and releasing it and then calming everything down and up and everything. And it's supposed to be this kind of musical journey that the listener is supposed to, or invited to be transformed in sort of way go along with all these different movements. And in a sense, it's about, almost like going on a hike or going out in nature, that you see different landscapes and you just see the changings of the sky and the weather is changing and everything. So it's about being like that. And all the music that we made is about the same thing, basically. So I think it's pretty obvious that it's not like city music in a very urban setting. So I mean, it is romantic, it is dramatic, it is emotional. So, and that's what we like.
Would you accept the idea of, you've indirectly mentioned it, you've said that this is a Tromsø album. Would you take it as a compliment if somebody said, like, okay, this is in some ways the ultimate soundtrack to a voiceless environment?
Yeah, it sounds like a compliment to me.
Okay. Because it should be.
But I mean, yeah, it really does. I think that, I mean, I don't listen to that much music when I'm outdoors, but I think that if I did, maybe something like this would be in my ear. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine that it would be nice.
Yeah, I think Brefiere would support the experience that people can have when they're walking around Tromsø or in the nature around the city. Mm-hmm. Or also maybe when they're out on the waters around the city.
Sure.
Now we're already going into the terrain and of like reception. I mean, like, the record came out September 22nd. Now when we record this, it's November 27th. How have the responses been so far?
I mean, it's been really good. We received quite a lot of reviews, and that's also, of course, very nice to read people actually getting the picture and trying, understanding what we're setting out to do and writing that down and telling others to listen to it, which is basically what most reviewers have done so far, which is obviously really, really nice as a musician to get that kind of response. But also, I mean,
the response from the fans and audience has been really good, and it's always a strange experience to, you know, making music is something that is quite private and something you do alone, or I do alone. And also when we're rehearsing it, it's just the six of us, you know, working together, and it's quite intense for a long period of time. And suddenly it's out there, and actually to hear that what we make has some significance for others is obviously really, really nice. And people, yeah, it's been quite a few touching moments when people get up to us or write emails or messages to us and tell us that they like the album. I mean, it's really nice.
Now, the record has been released through Pelagic Records. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think most of the others have always been on different labels. I know that Mura,
everyone,
2018 was released through Physisk format, right?
Physisk format.
And I think another one was released through Digger, right? If I remember correctly.
It's quite complicated.
So how did the collaboration with Pelagic happen? Did you approach them? Did they approach you?
I don't recall exactly how it happened, but we both played at the festival in Oslo, at Øya Festival, which is like the coolest festival in Norway, basically. Mm-hmm. And they saw our show and we saw their shows, and we got in touch later on. And I honestly don't remember exactly, so sorry, Robin, if I have this incorrectly, but whether they approached us or vice versa, but I think maybe we sent them an email and just asked them if they, you know, liked the album. Mm-hmm. And immediately got along great and decided to collaborate, and we have some plans for future collaboration as well. So I think this is just the beginning of Spoof's participation on Pelagic, and for us it feels like a really great place to be. Obviously there's a lot of other bands that we like a lot, and the guys are great, and gals as well, so I mean everyone helping out, and it's a really great team.
Are there any particular bands on the roster where you say, like, oh, I like those really much? Because I think there are like one or two where you say, like, I'd play with them if I could.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest and say that Mono is, of course, just like a huge source of inspiration, obviously.
That was,
It should be quite obvious, I think. I've listened to them for ages, and it's kind of, it's one of those formative bands, I guess, from my late teenage years. And being on the same record label is really cool. But also The Ocean, actually. Mm-hmm. So I listened to them, you know, since, I don't know, many years ago, 15, 18 years ago, something like that. And it's also really cool to be able to, or have been able that we have been able to go on tour with them now this fall and do some shows with them, and This mm-hmm. Will Destroy You, which is really cool. So, but also there are other really great bands like LLN and Savir, our Norwegian comrades, who just released an album, and which is amazing. So, I mean, there's so much great stuff going on there. So that's cool.
Yeah. The one band from that roster that I still want to interview, I think that's the hardest one, is Mono, for language reasons. But everybody who's listening to this, we have an interview with The Ocean just a few days ago. We have one of the guys from This Will Destroy You, Jeremy. So if you want to know more about the Pelagic roster, check out our website, our channel. You will find a lot of Pelagic out there. For a lot of reasons. I mean, like, first of all, they put out great records, and second of all, because they got really nice bands. However, a follow-up question, and I hope you don't mind me asking, when I listen to Breviere, I do not feel as if I am listening to somebody or to a band which is strongly influenced by music. So it sounds as if there are not that many direct influences on the band. Is that just my notion, or do you try to be autark in a way?
Well, I would say we're very much influenced by a lot of music and a lot of bands very strongly. So I think I would disagree on that. But music is not the only source of inspiration, as we have discussed now. Obviously, nature and literature and a lot of other things are going into the mix. But I and the others, we are listening to a lot of different things and very intently and quite actively on this album. Maybe that's also something that's different from previous records, that I did a lot of quite direct analysis of things I like in other kind of music, like a lot of different things, and trying to figure out what I like and how other bands make, or composers or whatever, make things work in their context, and whether or not I could learn something from that. So it's from a lot of different genres and a lot of different artists, and it's not like I'm sitting around just waiting for inspiration. It is work making music, and quite structural and analytical, parts of it at least. I mean, it's about understanding what makes something work, and not only just trying and hope you're lucky.
Can you maybe give like an example, without going into like rabbit hole details, but can you give an example where you have like a band that influences you?
We have, I'm trying to find a good example. I mean, okay, this is a weird one, maybe. I was listening to a lot of Dolly Parton when I was writing this album.
We love weird ones over here.
Yeah. It's basically because my two-year-old fell in love with Dolly Parton, so we listened to it in the car all the time.
It's funny, right? A lot of children like Dolly Parton. My girl also had a phase where for like a week she was singing nothing but Jolene and other Dolly stuff. I don't know why.
I mean, Jolene is still the number one hit on my Spotify list for like 2-3 years in a row now. So, I mean, it's not only my doing, but what a great song. So I was trying to listen to a lot of, in particular that album, but several others as well, Mountain Home Tennessee and a lot of other stuff, and just listen to the way that they are layering a lot of stuff going on. And it's very simple. It's like the basic idea is very simple. So you have a melody and it's chord progression, but the production is just amazing, with so many things going on. And I mean, not going into particulars, but it's about trying to find out how you combine a melody with, you know, a counter melody or something going on down in the corner that you're not being attentive to, but makes the whole thing work. And I think that a lot of Dolly Parton music, or Dolly Parton songs, are, you know, really good at that. That being said, I'm also listen to a lot of classical music in my ears, and I'm in a very deep Johann Sebastian Bach period at the moment, and trying to, you know, just listen to a lot of stuff and compositions there. And doing that is maybe not the smartest thing you can do as a songwriter, because you just feel silly on going back to the guitar. But there are things that, you know, is obviously famous about this is the way he approached counterpoint and how independent melodies cross into each other and go together. It's not like only having a chord progression and a melody on the top, but
yeah, and also where they go from the point where they meet, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So having independent melodies, so that you could basically write one melody and alone it would sound great, and then you add another melody that also alone sounds great, and when you combine it, they still work. So it's kind of trying to do that kind of layering in a rock band setting, obviously, which is very different from know, an orchestra or piano piece, but trying to find all these different things and try to be better at that handicraft part of composing songs, I guess.
By the way, if anybody, nerd talk between all of you out there and all of us out here, nerd talk, if you want to find out another great example of the influence on Bach, of Bach on modern music, watch the movie Mr. Holland's Opus, one of my all-time favorites, about a music teacher in the States. And he doesn't like teaching. And at one point he notices, okay, from now on, I have to enjoy this because I have to do this for the next 30 some years. And the next day he goes into school, he plays a part by Bach, And his students are sitting there like, And then he only switches it up a little notch, and they recognize that it's the same song that they have been hearing in the 60s. So you will see a lot of Bach in modern music without noticing it. Another example would be a lot of the stuff that Billy Joel wrote. I like that. I also like the idea of turning classical music into modern surroundings. But you would not call your own project post-rock slash neoclassical, right? It's still, for you, it's still post-rock.
I mean, those, it's not very important for us, those labels, I guess. So, I mean, I don't mind, as some bands do, but I think we started out pretty clearly with a post-rock band ambition. And I that's okay with me. But I think that what's good about that kind of genre, post-metal, post-rock, post-whatever thing, is that it's all about using the rock band into a rock band context, a rock band setting, of, and then just go from there in some other direction. And I think that it's very easy to, you know, fall back down on the ideas that Explosion in the Sky and Mono once created, and try to repeat that or try to achieve the same thing as they did. And I know I get that, and that might be fun, but I think it's also nice to try to see where, which other directions can we put rock music in the future. And I think that, yeah, another really important source of inspiration has been Liturgy, the American transcendental black metal band thing. And this kind of over ambitious idea of making music and trying to pushing it like so far, and how Hans Hendrix has talked so much about kind of the impure, the idea of the impure, as something that should be achieved in black metal as well. In contrast to the true Norwegian pure black metal, and trying to incorporate all those different sources of inspiration from hip hop to classical to whatever, it's like, I think I find it really, really inspiring, not to copy what they are doing and what she's doing, but trying to you know, to use that inspiration to do our thing in a different direction, and maybe especially the idea of not transposing classical music into a rock band setting, like putting strings on, like SMN Metallica thing, but trying to, I mean,
I think I know what you mean.
Different ways. Yeah, I mean,
would you rather have a real could you imagine a real violin? Yes. Could you also imagine playing the guitar with a bow?
Sure.
See, I could. That's what you mean, right? Mean, you know, like transponding the things, right?
Yeah, I mean, and maybe a violin with guitar picks. So, I mean, it's more about trying to get to the core of what the music is all about, and then don't see the limits within the genres, but see the possibilities that crossover and cross influence can make. So, I mean, I listen to a lot of techno, I listen to a lot of hip hop, well, not much hip hop, sorry. The other guys in the band listen to a lot of hip hop, but I'm not adverse to that at all. And There are some very direct influences on say the rhythm section from hip hop tracks into Brevfjärde. I mean, it's all about trying to find the best music out there, regardless of who's making it. So,
Very interesting. And it's also very interesting that you mention Haler Hunt Hendrix, another one of those people that we had the fortune to interview this year.
Oh, great.
So if anybody wants, I think it's somewhere in May 2023 that we release the interview with her. I have one last question, which is also a little bit connected to influences, before we then go to the infamous quickfire round. You are already a sextet, right? You're six people in the band. Nevertheless, there have been parts where I thought, how are they going to do this life? I mean, like, okay, I can see how you incorporate a glockenspiel into your music. But how about a brass section? How do you do that live?
Well, we have a trombone player all the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So but there's one guy. So he has to play all of
that's
that.
That's one. Yeah. Mostly it is solo trombone on the mm-hmm. album, even though it sounds immense. But and on Somme Skyer, we have trombone and trumpet. And then Eirik on guitar also play the trumpet. So they do combine together too as a brass section live. And but mostly it's the solo trombone. But it's it sounds huge, so no worries there. But also glockenspiel, we have live lap steel guitar, and several of us are doing percussion when we can. And on this tour, we didn't have any strings with us, but before we have had usually a couple, like a cello and a violinist, cellist and violinist on several shows. But we can do, I mean, usually we solve it that sometimes we have some playback tracks going on. Sometimes we don't. So, and it works fine, nevertheless.
However, what I basically wanted to ask is, when you write that music, you probably never think about how are we going to stage this, right? You write the music for music, not for a live experience.
No, not at all. That's actually, I'm pretty aware how we're going to do this live. And I learned the hard way because I didn't think about that the first two records. And they are so difficult to play. Even though I think they're simpler in some ways, they're just almost impossible in terms of like where on the guitar you're supposed to play. And I mean, it's just a mess. So both Myra and this album, I wrote in a way that was supposed to be played live. But with layers upon layers, and what's maybe the good thing about layering with different melodies is that even though if you move one, you still have a lot of melodies going on. There's a lots to listen to, even if the one part isn't there. But that being said, I mean, usually nowadays we do with playback some tracks, and that usually works fine. No, it's actually pretty, I thought quite a lot on that, actually, on this album.
Which is very interesting for a record which also is pretty intricate at some points. You know, it has a lot of nice little details in the layers. It's interesting that even at writing, you thought about that. That's very compelling.
Thanks. No, I mean, it's of this album, we mainly play the four kind of instrumental songs live, but we're planning a show which hasn't been announced yet, but in Oslo, where we're hopefully going to play the whole thing with choir and everything. So yeah, look out for that, and maybe, you know, think about coming to Oslo sometime in April, mid-April, if you want to see that.
Difficult, that's roadburn times, remember.
Yeah, I know. It's really bad timing, but for some of you, maybe. And but before that, we were also, in general, it works quite nice live, I think. so the audience says as well.
There have been no negative thoughts about your live performance, and a few of our staff already had the pleasure of seeing you. So, Gustav, first of all, thanks for all those details about the new record, about how you write, about how you were inspired. However, nobody leaves the Veil of Sound interview without having to go through the infamous quickfire round. That means you will also be given a couple of questions, each question containing two alternatives, like what kind of music do you like, or what kind of movies do you like more, black and old black and whites or modern colored, AC versus DC, the US versus Canada, Ireland versus the country of the monkeys, at least political monkeys called the UK. So you always get two alternatives and have to choose and give a short explanation for your choice. Starting with the t-shirt that you are wearing, Anathema. Which record do you like more? It must not be your favorite, but which one do you like more? Serenades or Eternity?
Serenades. I think it was one of the first records I had from Anathema. So, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's just there for me. Both great, but Serenades, definitely.
And now to contrast Anathema with another female-led, for the lack of better word, say, gothic doom band, Anathema versus The Gathering.
Both great, but Anathema is close to my heart. I mean, definitely Anathema for me. Great band.
Moving a little bit into the harder terrain of gothic music, Paradise Lost, gothic or icon?
Gothic, sorry.
No problem. No
I like
problem.
It. I like it. Gothic.
You've mentioned your love for mono, and again, I'm not sure if either of them is your go-to mono album, but Hymn for the Immortal Wind or For My Parents?
Hymn for the Immortal Wind. Hymn to the Immortal Wind? Hymn for?
One of them.
Anyways. No, him. Okay. It was, that's one hell of a record. I mean, it's also great again, but I think actually him was the first record I really, really liked and listened to a lot of. So it's still one I'm listening to regularly, I would say.
When you listen to music, I mean, like, I think I already have an answer, but when you listen to music, do you rather listen to it analog or do you also use streaming?
Oh, I do streaming. So it's may be surprising, but I generally listen to streaming. It's simply practical reasons. My vinyl player is in the basement and I haven't read it since I moved here to Tromsø, but still it's digital mostly. Mm-hmm. I'm not very particular about the system I'm listening to, actually.
All good. If these trees could talk or this will destroy you, which band would you rather listen to right now?
This will destroy you any day of the week. Even though...
any day of the week? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, this will destroy you. Like, I mean, it's strange talking about this, but also This Will Destroy is one of those bands that has been just so extremely important, and I really, really, really like so many of their albums, so I could listen to them, you know, all the time. Great stuff.
In order not to make your label boss ashamed, I will not give you The Ocean versus somebody, but I'll give you two records by The Ocean. One of them is my favorite. I'm not going to say which one. Pelagial versus Precambrian.
Precambrian. First record I listened to of The Ocean and by The Ocean, and again one of those, actually I would say a main source of inspiration for our band. I mean, it's just so much going on.
Yeah,
it's over the top. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's ridiculous. So really, really cool album. What's yours favorite? Your favorite?
It is Precambria. Although I have to say I have a very soft spot for Heliocentric, Also because I use one of the heliocentric songs in class all the time, every year once, basically. But as a record, all in all, I think I'm pretty sure to say that if I had to choose like 10 island records, Precambrian would be among that. Also because there are so many voices on there that I simply love, you know, like so many people that I admire, you know, that is another reason for that. You have to choose between two albums by PG99. E or Versus?
By who?
PG Lost. Oh. Key or Versus?
To be honest, I haven't listened enough to those albums to have a qualified opinion. I haven't listened that much to PG Lost, actually. H Lost, isn't it?
PG Lost. PG 99 is also a band, but much harder.
Yeah.
Much harder.
Yeah. No, I'll pass on that one.
Do you listen to something like hardcore?
Not much. Not much. I mean, there's a couple of Norwegian like post-hardcore bands, like J.R. Ewing, that's an old one, and Cyan Explode.
Malmström.
Malmström, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, you know it.
Person.
Cyan Explode, have you heard that?
Mm-hmm.
It's a small, I really like, they just released one album and one EP like 15 years ago or something like that, 10 years ago, but it's been also, it's really cool. It's one of the guitarists playing Sibir now, which is also really cool. More like a metal band than a hardcore band, but also really cool. Check it out if you haven't. Sibir. With two.
So I have
eyes.
Two more. I have two more. One easy one, and I thought of your surroundings. And you know, you're surrounded by the sea, you're surrounded by the mountains. If you could choose any place at the beach or versus any place in the mountains, which location would you rather go?
You know, the best thing about this area is that you have both things.
But you have to choose
beaches and mountains.
You have mountains, to choose some other place. No, I know Tromsø is the perfect place for you, but
yeah, mountains.
Okay. Is there any particular region where you say, okay, I'd like to go there once in my life?
In the world, in general?
Any mountain region worldwide.
Oh, mountain region. No, I mean, no. I'm mostly interested in getting to know this place even better. So, you know, I have some islands out here with a lot of mountains. And since I have small kids, we don't, you know, go that much up on the top. And I would really like to do that much more. So I think we have some of the best places in the world right here. So, yeah, I'm curious about that.
And last one.
No respect to everywhere else.
No disrespect to anywhere else. But if you love your home, then you love your home. Totally fine with us. Last one. Connected to my poster back there. Godspeed, You Black Emperor versus Mogwai.
Oh. No.
My choice is Godspeed. Clear.
Yeah,
Godspeed for you as well.
Yeah, I like Mogwai.
Yeah,
of course, it's a great band. But Godspeed is. I mean, we touched upon so many like formative bands, like things I listened to when I was like 15, 16, 17, and it's difficult to get past that stage. Godspeed is one of those, you know, extremely important bands for me. So really like them and love them live and everything. So it's cool.
I can totally understand all of that. Gustav, thanks for your time. Thanks for everything you've said. For all those people watching out there, if you like this interview and have not seen all the other stuff we did, maybe give us a subscription. You get one interview minimum a week. Right now, during this marathon, you will get one interview every day till January 1st. If you like that, then give us a subscription here. Maybe give us a like on one of our socials on Facebook or on Instagram. If you want to support us a little bit more, there are various ways. Of course, a few days ago, we had the first one to donate something through YouTube. I didn't even know that was possible. what it seems to be. And it also already arrived on an account of ours. If you want to support us via Patreon, we also are there if you want to do that. Otherwise, of course, be a friend, tell a friend. That's also always the best promotion we can get. And now, Gustav, your chance for final last words to the world out there.
I haven't prepared a speech, but thank you so much for having me. And thank you to everyone who has listened to this and been interested to following this conversation for, I know, just over an hour now. We're working on new material and working on new shows next year. So hopefully it won't take 5 years for the next album to arrive this time. So hopefully, you know, you will see it soon, or maybe not soon, but in the not too distant future. So thanks for staying in touch, everyone. And thank you so much for having me for this interview.
You're welcome, Gustav. Enjoy the rest of your day and get well into 2024. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Likewise. Bye-bye.